From KXCV KRNW, it's Now Showing with your host, Patty Hawley.
Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us. On this afternoon's program, Downtown St. Joseph kicks off its 11th year of noontime concerts. Museums are in the business of preserving history. Now they're offering you a chance to learn how to preserve your own history. A female music group celebrates its 50th anniversary with an upcoming concert. And Pictures of Poverty, an effort by Community Action Partnership in St. Joseph. The first Thursday Downtown Noon Concert Series in St. Joseph begins in September. This marks the 11th year for these concerts. This year's first recital will be Thursday, September 3rd. Jerry Anderson is the director of music at the First Presbyterian Church in St. Joseph and one of the organizers of the concerts.
Well, it's a monthly series of recitals from September through April, except for January. This is the 11th year we've had this. Trying to find something for people to do during their lunchtime if they're downtown, or provide something for seniors to go to who don't like to get out at night for concerts. And it's just kind of sprung up and become much more popular than we ever thought when we first started. We had people come from a radius of 75 miles or so into these concerts, and we provide just a variety of types of music. Everyone in it is connected with Missouri Western State University. I shouldn't say everyone, but at least some are from Missouri Western State College as a student, a faculty member, or alumnus. We have classical piano. We have bluegrass guitar at times, choral groups, bands, jazz groups. And it's just been amazing the response we've gotten since we started this. We're averaging about 130 in attendance for these. And people can bring their brown bag lunches if they wish. We furnish pop, water, and coffee. The time of the concerts is 12:10 to 12:45. And people come and they have time to get back to work if they're downtown working. So this is just another thing we have for the people who work downtown, as well as other people outside who want to come.
How do you decide what performers will be performing on a particular Thursday?
Well, the committee goes through a list of people who are available. Like this year, we have four new faculty members at Missouri Western, a pianist, a violinist, and two vocalists. And so we naturally wanted to feature them and let the community hear them. So all four of them will be on the series. We try to have a variety, so we usually have some piano, some instrumentalist, some vocalist, and we bring back the people who seem to be especially popular. So those are some of the decisions we go through.
Why do you think this is such a popular program that you have that many people attending to enjoy the performances?
Because I think there's a dearth of activities like this available during the daytime. And we really do find that a lot of the seniors do not want to get out at night for concerts, and usually that's the time that they're available, except maybe weekend, Sunday afternoons. And people just seem to be enthusiastic about these concerts, and they show up at 30, 45 minutes ahead of time waiting for it, as though they're afraid they might not find a seat, although it's very, very few times we've sold out all seats.
Now, this has been going on 11 years, I think you said.
This is the beginning of the 11th year. We have finished a decade.
Okay. What do you attribute the success of the program to? I mean, this takes a lot of organizing and, you know, a lot of promotion and a lot of work to get it going and continuing like this. What's behind the success?
I think the quality of the performances. People really get excited about these people, people they might not have heard otherwise. A lot of people don't realize we have that kind of talent in St. Joseph. And again, some are just excited to have some place like this to go to during the daytime. And so they sometimes stay around and talk for a long time afterwards, and they always get to have a chance to meet the performers afterwards, too. So it's a very intimate setting. They know they can go up and speak with the performers afterwards, so people are just very enthusiastic about it.
Can you tell me about the next performance that's coming up?
The first one will be the first Thursday in September. It'll be a new piano faculty member, Nathaniel May, who just got his DMA, Doctor of Musical Arts degree from the University of Kansas. He taught in Cyprus for 5 years before coming back to KU for his doctorate. In fact, the program we're going to hear is something he's going to take to Cyprus in later September. A wonderful young man. He and his wife have now moved to the community with their 3 kids, and I think he's going to be a real staunch member of the St. Joseph community.
And then how many performances this year will you have? It's one every month except for January, is that correct?
Yeah, so that makes 7 of them, right.
Do you have anything that you think will really be the highlight of this season?
I think most of them will be highlights. October, we're having an alumnus, Sean Agnew, bass singer, who is now director of music at Ashland United Methodist Church. He'll be giving part of his master's recital from UMKC for us in October. In November will be the violinist Rico McNeely, who is the new conductor of the St. Joseph Symphony and teaching violin at Missouri Western. December will be the First Presbyterian Church Sanctuary and Handbell Choirs, directed by me and Judy Long. February will be Bob Long, director of jazz studies at Missouri Western and a saxophonist, who will appear with Jeremy Gregoire, one of our alumni pianists, who is quite a jazz pianist with several awards. And March will have the featuring of the new vocal faculty, plus the continuing Dr. David Benz, who's the director of vocal studies at Missouri Western. And then April, it will conclude with my playing Sounds of the Season for Lent and Easter on the organ and piano.
Again, the first Thursday downtown noon concerts begin at 12:10 at the First Presbyterian Church at 301 North 7th Street in St. Joseph. Those attending are encouraged to bring a sack lunch. Beverages will be available at the church. You can find a list of upcoming performances on our website at kxcb.org. St. Joseph is full of educational entities. Public Relations Officer with the St. Joseph Museums, Kathy Reno, says depending on how you want to classify museum, there are 8 to 9 different ones in St. Joseph.
The Wyeth Tootle Mansion is one. If someone is interested particularly in architecture, that's a wonderful 19th century mansion that they can actually see the interior and how that all came together, because there's tons of gorgeous mansions in town. That's one of our biggest strengths, is our beautiful architecture. But that's one that you can see how that all comes together. Another one is the Glore Psychiatric Museum. That's another one of ours. It's now listed in a 1,000 places to see before you die in the United States and Canada is our latest claim to fame. But it's also an off-the-beaten-path, haunted Missouri, so on and so forth, because of its uniqueness. And it chronicles the history of State Lunatic Asylum No. 2, which actually was the name of the state hospital, mental hospital, when it opened in 1879. Obviously not a name we would use today, but that is how the museum began. And it chronicles the treatment of mental health issues from the beginnings to today in the state of Missouri and elsewhere. The St. Joseph Museum, which is dedicated to American Indian artifacts, St. Joseph history from prehistoric times to what put St. Joseph on the map, how are we founded, the fur trade, Western immigration, that kind of thing. The Black Archives Museum, which is dedicated to the African-American experience in St. Joseph, who were the leaders coming up. Some famous St. Joseph African-Americans, Coleman Hawkins being one that I know everybody's heard of, father of the tenor sax. So, of course, we focus on music. What were St. Joseph's contributions? And, of course, I think one of our biggest contributions is in the area of music.
The museums go beyond just static buildings where you come and look at things, and an example of that is a workshop that's coming up. Can you tell me what that is?
We'll be doing a historic document preservation workshop in September. We actually have 3 different sessions. On Thursday, September 17th, we'll have one session from 1:30 to 3:30, another one that evening from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m., And then on Friday, September 18th, we'll repeat the workshop at 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. And what this is, we've been working on this project in cooperation with the University of Missouri Extension Office. We're bringing in Claudia Powell. She's the head document preservation specialist for the Western Historic Manuscripts of the Ellis Library in the University of Missouri. This is her forte. She's an expert in the field. And we thought it would be wonderful, since we get so many requests for, I have this document, it's crucial to my family, or our genealogy society, or our small museum, and once it's lost, we can't replace it, so what do we do? And she will actually teach people how to do it themselves, bring the tools, bring the instruments, because to hire it done, you can do it, but it's extremely expensive. So she will teach people a skill that will save them money many times over. So it's actually designed for professionals, but it's also for individuals. I know one person who said they had their great-great-grandmother's marriage certificate, and they called the museum, but it's got tears, what do I do? And we thought, well, let's bring someone in to address that kind of issue, because preservation of history is what we're all about, and it doesn't necessarily have to be something we're preserving just for ourselves.
Who do you recommend attend this workshop?
I would say anyone that's interested in preservation at this point of paper documents. We're dealing this time with paper. How to repair. She'll show us how to repair, how to preserve, so that you can have it for generations to come. And it is open to, obviously, libraries, genealogy societies, small museums. Within driving distance, anyone who's interested, basically, it can be an individual, or it can be someone who deals with this on a professional level. Institution might want to send a representative. Like, I know a couple of, well, the first person who signed up actually owns his own frame shop. And, of course, he needs to know, because he's got people going, can you frame this? But he would rather preserve it before he frames it, and he needs to know how to make repairs. And he's saying, oh, for me, this is ideal. So he's strictly an individual business owner.
Now, when you say this is for paper documents, does that include photographs?
It could, and that's one thing that we ask. To get started, everyone is asked to bring a document to work on, so they can bring what they want to work on. The workshops are limited to 10 participants each of the three times, because obviously she wants to be able to give some one-on-one attention.
Why do you feel that it's important that people learn how to preserve their documents, whether they take it to a professional or whether they, you know, learn on their own to do that? Why does that matter?
Well, if we lose some of these documents, obviously researchers are at a loss when they go to find something. It's important to genealogy. It's important to know our history. If we know where we've been, we know how we got here, we know where we're going. And that's one of the things that got me into museum work. How did we get to where we are, and what does that tell us about what the future might hold? And I think preserving our important documents speaks to that, because we get so many questions at the museum. And we just wish, like everyone who jumped off from St. Joe to head west, you don't know how badly we all wish they'd sign some sort of registry so that when somebody comes to us and goes, well, we think that such and such relative left from here, we would love to be able to prove that. So I would like to make it easier for the researchers of the future. And to me, that's what document preservation does. It helps answer those questions. We have to think beyond our own time, and this helps us do that.
The Historic Document Preservation Workshops will be September 17th at 1:30 and 6:30, and September 18th at 9:30. The workshops will be held at the St. Joseph Museum at 3406 Frederick Avenue in St. Joseph. You can find a link to register for the workshops or find more information on our website at kxcv.org, or you can call the St. Joseph Museum at 816-232-8471 or 800-530-8866. Riversong is celebrating its 50th year this year. Riversong is a Sweet Adeline International chorus with members from Northwest Missouri, Kansas, and even Nebraska. Marketing coordinator for Riversong, Donna Turk, says the chorus has a tradition of stellar performances.
It started in St. Joe in 1959 under the direction of Byron Myers, who was the director for many, many years. That initial chorus had about 40 women, and over the years it went anywhere from 40, went up over 100. It was the first Sweet Adeline International Chorus to reach 100 members. We're back down now around 40. It goes back, you know, it goes up and down. We are also part of Region 7, which encompasses Northwest Missouri, Eastern Kansas, Southern Nebraska, and Southern Iowa. So we compete with choruses all within that region.
How has this group done in competitions?
Oh, over the years, we've done phenomenally well. The larger the chorus, the better you do. And it shouldn't necessarily be that way, but it is. So over the years, we have won many, many competitions. I believe it's 13 regional competitions over the years, have placed as high as second internationally twice. Most recently, our chorus took first place in the Division A for regional competition, and also won a Ruby Pike Award, which is a very special award for us. It's to the chorus with the highest music score. So that's really quite a feat.
So this, it's an award-winning group. It sounds like the performances are something that are exciting for people to come see.
Oh, they are. They really are. We compete once a year in the spring, and it's in Kansas City this year in April. Those competitions are open to the public. If you've never been to a Sweet Adeline competition, it's really exciting. You get to see, first of all, there are many, many quartets within the choruses that compete first. It's a two-day process. They would compete on Saturday, on Friday, and then on Saturday would be the chorus competition. So you get to see all levels of Sweet Adelines, whether it's a very novice quartet or a very experienced quartet. And same thing with choruses. Choruses with, that will range anywhere from 15 members, which is the smallest a chorus can be, to over 100, which is the size of the Kansas City chorus right now.
You have a special show coming up, a 50th anniversary show that's coming up in September. Tell me a little bit about what we can expect in that performance.
Our show in September is called River Rising. Since we became River Song 3 years ago, since we've renamed ourselves River Song 3 years ago, we have taken show names that have to do with the river and where we are in Missouri and how life evolves here. A traditional Sweet Adeline show normally has the chorus standing on risers performing with choreography, and there's some dialogue, and you sing your songs, but it's pretty much like a staged performance for that you would go to see in a high school. Our shows have not been like that, and then this one is definitely not like that. We won't even have risers on the stage until the second half of the show, when we invite the alumni chorus to come up and join us. It will be a completely staged show. We are never standing in the same place twice or next to the same person, so you never know who you're singing next to. There's dialogue. It's completely scripted, and it is so much fun. It's going to be an exciting, exciting show. We're going to have a quartet by the name of Jackpot. They come from Orlando, Florida, and they're the second place internationally ranked quartet. And maybe just this year they'll turn up, you know, they're always hoping for that first place, which will make them queens of harmony in the organization. They've been singing a long time, and they're a very exciting quartet, very enjoyable and fun to watch.
Can you give me a list of some of the music that we'll hear during that performance?
Being the song is named, the chorus is River Song, and the show is named River Rising. We do have a lot of river songs, Shenandoah, Moon River.
What do you think will be the most exciting thing for people who attend this to see?
I think the fact that this is a 50th anniversary show, the quartet, of course, is going to be very exciting. They always are. We also have several quartets within our chorus that will be singing. And the alumni chorus, which will be the second half of the show, after Jackpot sings, we'll be inviting members that were previous members to come up and sing with us. We're going to have them come for rehearsals. We want them to make at least one rehearsal before we sing so that they will feel comfortable. We're going to sing about four songs, regional songs, songs that they're probably familiar with. And I think just having such a wide variety of people from many, many years past on the chorus will be very exciting.
Donna Turk is marketing coordinator for Riversong. She says the 50th anniversary performance will be September 19th at the Missouri Theater in St. Joseph. Tickets are available from any chorus member or on their website at riversongchorus.com. When you think of art, the first thing that comes to mind may be the thought of beautiful colors or shapes or a striking scene. You probably don't think of a picture of a dilapidated building or a neighborhood that shows poverty. But Community Action Partnership in St. Joseph is hoping that changes over the next few months. The organization is working on a photography exhibit that focuses on poverty in this area. Rachel McCoy is the Director of Development and Communication.
Community Action Partnership is really excited to host the first Pictures of Poverty photo contest and exhibit. It will be at the Albright Kemper Museum of Art here in St. Joseph the last 2 weeks of October. Really, the point behind the exhibit is to shock people with the fact that the poor do exist in Northwest Missouri, Buchanan County, Andrew County, Nottoway, Clinton, DeKalb, and to give them a view of what they look like and how they're living.
So is that how it came to be? You wanted to let people know that we do have poverty in our area?
We've been talking in our agency and our satellite agencies across the region about the fact that it seems to some people that the poor have become invisible. And we don't know if that's due to the populations where people live. Maybe they just don't encounter low-income people on a regular basis. But in Buchanan County alone, there are 16,000 people living in poverty. So it really is a problem. It really is something that we want people to think about and talk about and dialogue about and really become advocates for low-income persons who are working towards stability. And we thought partnering with an artistic event might cause a new kind of fresh look at poverty in our area. It might seem like an unusual fit to be thinking about fighting poverty and utilizing the arts community, but the truth is we can talk about the socioeconomic factors behind generational or situational poverty all day long, but when you see that photo that makes you just gasp and say, that's happening right here in my community, then maybe that would have the kind of impact we need right now. There's more people coming to us for help than ever before, and I think that's true of all the social service agencies in Northwest Missouri. So this is the time everyone needs to kind of rally together. The truth is that poverty is about suffering and tragedy, and I think there's no better way to capture suffering and tragedy than photography or poetry, those kinds of artistic endeavors. So we hope to even get more involved in the arts community as we try to tell our story.
How will you get these photographs of poverty?
We're asking artists across Northwest Missouri to submit their original photography. There's four categories: high school, college student, amateur, or professional. There's no fee to participate, but we do ask that you submit two pieces, one or two, 8x10 or 16x20 in size. They can be black and white or color. And the theme would be, what does poverty look like in Northwest Missouri, or what does the hope of escape look like?
So what do you think artists will send to you?
We've already received a few inquiries from artists via email, and they'll send four or five pictures electronically and say, all of these represent poverty to me. What do you think? So they're trying to whittle down their work. It's actually been really exciting to see that people have been taking pictures of this. It seems to be sort of almost an unconscious awareness is building anyway. We don't know if that's due to the fact that our agency was started in 1965, so we're coming up on our 45th anniversary. People are starting to think more about some of those grassroots activities toward helping low-income people, and this is just sort of a natural occurrence. So as far as representing hope, everything from an open door or a window or a child participating in sort of an inner city sports league, it can have people, it can have buildings. It can be a metaphor, something that the artist interprets as hope of escape of poverty. We really want to leave it open to people's creative interpretation.
How long are you taking the submissions?
We'll be accepting photos until Tuesday, October 6th at 4 p.m., and then we are assembling a jury, so the pieces will be judged, and we're going to give prizes in each category. We will accept calls or questions to our office. We'd like for the pieces to come to our central office in St. Joseph. That's at 817 Monterey, and our typical business hours are 8 to 4:30 Monday through Friday.
When will the exhibit be then?
October 17th through November 1st at the Albright Kemper Museum of Art on Frederick Avenue here in St. Joseph. Everyone is invited to an opening reception on October 20th from 5 to 7 p.m.
Once people see this and recognize that poverty is a concern and a problem in this area, what do you hope happens?
We hope that they can't get it out of their mind, whether it's a child sleeping on a bare mattress on a floor without heat or lights, whether it's a family struggling, maybe sleeping in their car. These kinds of stories we hear every day at our office, and we would like people, first, not to be able to get out of their mind, and second, to decide they want to do something. That could be contacting Community Action Partnership and saying, I want to volunteer, I want to donate, I want to host a poverty simulation in my community. There are so many ways we can plug them into the solution. There's a really fascinating new angle that just came up last week. There's a national photography exhibit hosted by professional photojournalists all across the country, and it's called In Our Own Backyard, based on the same premise that the poor seem to be disappearing from our view, but yet they're there just like they've always been. And so Community Action Partnership has contacted the agency that's putting on that exhibit and asked if we can show these professional photojournalism essays and video productions, sort of project them during the exhibit so that people can see what the national take on poverty is. And we'll be the Missouri site for In Our Own Backyard for their campaign using photojournalism to show pictures of poverty.
And so that will be alongside the photos at the exhibit in October?
Correct. The coordinators of this national In Our Own Backyard exhibit plan to send some photos for display that we can have alongside our local work. And during the opening reception, we'll be playing a couple of documentary-type clips that the journalists have put together, all based on the same goal and purpose of getting people to notice and think about and take action toward poverty.
Again, artists can submit work by 4 p.m. Tuesday, October 6th, at the Community Action Partnership office at 817 Monterey Street in St. Joseph. The exhibit begins October 17th at the Albrecht Kemper Museum of Art, with a reception scheduled for Thursday, October 20th. You can find information about these events and links to various arts organizations on the KXCV KRNW website at kxcv.org. Please join us again next Thursday. In the meantime, have a great weekend. For KXCV KRNW, I'm Patty Hawley.